large medical device companies have had cloud infrastructure going back 20 years. Recently, especially post-2020, you've seen this huge shift of devices as they leave the hospital and start going into the patient's homes. So you saw this kind of cloud necessity kind of spring out of COVID. And to build traditional cloud infrastructure from scratch tends to be very expensive for companies to do just in general, let alone for startup companies to do.
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. From developing advanced technology for astronauts to medical devices, today's guest has had a fascinating founder journey. I'm Alex Merwin from AWS, and on this episode, Yin He speaks with Alex Condon, COO and co-founder of Galen Data. Their platform helps medical device companies get FDA-compliant cloud connectivity in weeks instead of months. Let's hear how they're transforming medical device development.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. I'm really excited to guest host this session today. My name is Yin He, and I lead our work with early-stage healthcare and life sciences startups and investors at AWS. I'm trained as a wet lab scientist with a PhD in molecular bio and genomics. Prior to AWS, I was an early employee and operator at a venture-backed startup building cloud labs and software tools to help pharma and biotechs accelerate drug discovery. I'm so excited today to be joined by Alex Condon, co-founder and COO at Galen Data. Let's go ahead, dig in, and I'm looking forward to learning more about your founder journey and how Galen came to be. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you so much for having me, Ian. Pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. To get started, tell us a little bit about Galen, what you all do, and then how do you think your approach is differentiated and unique in the market?
Sure. So Galen Data is a medical device cloud data management platform, which is a whole bunch of words.
Like, that's a mouthful.
It is, absolutely. And I say that so often now, it just rolls off the tongue. But essentially what we do is we help medical device companies, and that can be physical or digital medical device companies, get their data in the cloud. So centralized in all one place, in this case, it's AWS, obviously. And then once the data is there, we have tools that allow them to build views of their device data for different stakeholders. That could be for clinicians, it could be for patients, it could be for third parties. We allow them to host algorithms adjacent to their data inside of our walled garden. We allow them to create notifications and reports. So maybe a device is acting in a way that it shouldn't. Maybe a diagnosis is ready or a new patient is created. We allow them to configure how those notifications work, or if there's a report that needs to be tailored to a certain audience, we have automated tools that allow them to get that data in that form to wherever it needs to go. And then lastly, we help companies get that data into the electronic health record. So the continuum of services for devices that need the cloud for some reason in kind of a configurable format. And then around all of that, we do all of the regulatory and privacy concerns and the cybersecurity concerns, both domestically and then internationally as they scale. That's all kind of our burden, not theirs.
I love that. I think what I love about all of this is just how both AWS and Galen, right, both focus on what we call here, at least, like this undifferentiated lift for our customers, is that we really want to enable our customers to think about the innovation and the science, right, on top of the core infrastructure. And you're doing that as well, right, a layer above AWS, but I would still call all of that kind of undifferentiated lift. Can you talk a little bit about that, right? Letting the customers focus on innovation rather than infrastructure, et cetera. Like, how does this actually play out in reality for your customers?
Sure. Some large medical device companies have had cloud infrastructure going back 20 years. Recently, especially post-2020, you've seen this huge shift of devices as they leave the hospital and start going into the patient's homes, things like that. So you saw this kind of cloud necessity kind of spring out of COVID. And to build traditional cloud infrastructure from scratch tends to be very expensive and burdensome for companies to do just in general, let alone for startup companies to do.
Well, and I want to say also the skill set, right? There typically isn't an overlap, right, in that skill set traditionally with how some of these scientists and doctors, right, and these founders have been trained.
Yes, a lot of doctors with ideas do not have the IT backgrounds to launch compliant and robust cloud infrastructure 100%. And if you look at like the non-regulated device space, so I'm thinking more kind of consumer-related devices or things in like energy or ag tech or these kinds of domains, you have these IoT platforms that kind of fill the same void that we do for medtech. So you can build your widget, work with a third-party company, get all the data presented the way you want, be able to ingest that data however you choose, and have a very quick path to market. And in medical, that wasn't something that really existed. The norm had always been around this idea of ownership. And so you would go out there and you would probably contract a third party or hire people in-house to build this cloud infrastructure for you. And that tends to be expensive. You're talking anywhere between kind of $500,000 to $2 million, anywhere between kind of maybe 6 and 18 months worth of time. And for especially younger companies, that's a lot of burn. That's a lot of problems if something is wrong with the software that was created by a third party and you have to go back and fix it. With this kind of approach, though, you take on business risk by working with a company like us. At the same time, you have access to now a robust platform that 80 plus companies have used that can get you to where you need to go without having to become an expert in all these different domains, especially these ones that change all the time, like the privacy, regulatory concerns, mm-hmm. cybersecurity, and those kinds of things.
Yeah. And I'm curious from your perspective, what we see is there's been this evolution, right? Typically med devices and any like hardware company, you wouldn't think, hey, there's a huge right cloud or software component, but I think that's completely changing, right? If you think about data, right? And analytics being at the core in terms of the technology value of some of these companies. Can you talk about how you all have seen that shift firsthand, right? All of these devices are right connected, streaming data, et cetera now.
Absolutely. So as kind of part of our origin story, we were building these kinds of custom solutions for small and large medtech companies. So we had a good idea going back now over a decade of kind of what companies were asking for. And initially, it was basically, all I want to do is to be able to monitor the health of my devices as they're out in the wild, so to speak. And then after that, there became more patient-centric kind of things where maybe they wanted to allow the patient to see their own data. But none of that was maybe going back to the company itself, or maybe the data was anonymized in ways that allow them to get that data easily. Now you see a lot more of kind of computational heavy, you know, things like software as a medical device, all these different mm-hmm. things that exist in the cloud where there's also a huge PHI component. And now with AI and again, with kind of the EHR integration piece, there's more layers of complexity that have been added. So we have seen this full, I would say over the last 12 years or more, maturation of medical device companies adopting the cloud. And medical device is always a laggard when it comes to new technology, not just because of the regulatory concerns and the costs and the innovation cycle and milestones and these kinds of things. But now I think you've seen that the companies that will succeed are the ones that are gathering their data and mm-hmm. able to do cool things with that data. And then also just unlocking new business models. We see a lot of like pay-per-use models and things like this, mm-hmm. being able to track patient compliance remotely, not having to go walk from device to device in a clinical trial or fly people around the country to be able to gather data. So I think that this kind of shift is an eventuality. It's only going to grow from here. And I think that in the future, there'll be more kinds of things like Galen that exist to fill that need. And it's just a matter of time.
Yeah. I want to take a step back and talk a little bit more about sort of your background. I've had the opportunity to get to know you, and you have such an interesting background. So I definitely want to share that with the audience. Can you share your journey and how that led you to Galen?
Sure. So I'm born and raised in Scottsdale, Arizona. I went to Arizona State University for finance, completely different from what I'm doing right now. It's always fascinating kind of how life takes you in different directions. Mm-hmm. I started my career working for a commodity trading advisor, basically a hedge fund that was using computers to basically trade commodities and stocks. And then from there, the opportunity came to work at NASA. So work for a NASA contractor called Titronic Software that basically is right around the corner from Johnson Space Center. Very cool, very innovative, working on, I would say, advanced technology and kind of a skunkworks R&D kind of fashion mm-hmm. with astronauts on staff. It's a very cool place. And when you're there, one of the interesting things is that the compliance rigor of Class 3 medical device software is very similar to that of spaceflight software. So in terms of documentation, in terms of testing, all these different things, certifications, there's actually a little density of medical device software providers in and around Johnson Space Center. And that's how the life sciences side of this NASA contractor got spun up, is adapting that ecosystem. The CEO of Galen Data, Chris DuPont, he was the one who spun up the life science division inside of Titronix, where we would start getting a lot of these life science projects, and a large bulk of them was cloud. And again, when you build these things over and over again, you look and say, if this need is being satisfied in other domains by non-regulated IoT platforms, can we build something similar that addresses medtech, that basically solves a lot of the problems that these clients are knocking on our door asking for? And that aha moment was from our CTO, Abbas Dilawala, And he basically said, we keep doing this over and over again. The idea of insanity is constantly repeating the same process without changing. Why can't we just build a platform that addresses 95% of these companies' asks, given kind of the requirements that we've seen previously, and try to take it to market? We basically came up with the idea in 2015. We incorporated in 2016. We launched the product in June of 2018. So we've been around quite a bit. And we were very fortunate as founders that Tytronix gave us some place in exchange for equity to build this product out. So instead of being ramen noodle founders and having to struggle, we were very fortunate to be able to launch this in a very comfortable way and then take it to market without a lot of the imperatives for growth burn. We really wanted to take time to make sure that the product that we launched was one that was as future-proof as we could make it and offered enough tool sets so that companies could really get a lot of value out of it.
Yeah. And I think the advantage here is you also, prior to even kicking off this company, like, you just had years of experience in terms of understanding, right, the market and customer needs and what is it that you needed to build as an MVP that was repeatable, right, that could immediately bring value when you bring it to market and then continue to build from there.
Absolutely. It was a cheat code, right? When we see all of these requirements documents come across our plate and we realize what the headaches are and what people are happy with and what people aren't, what they'd like to see today, what they'd like to see tomorrow, and then just be able to take all those good ideas, condense them, and then launch them as our own thing and then see where the world takes us. No, we were very lucky. A different path traveled than a lot of other companies. And for that, we're very fortunate.
You always hear how important it is that the founding team, right, gets along and knows each other. It sounds like that's the journey that you and the co-founders have taken. Is that something that you feel like has worked out really well in your case?
100%. We had previous work experience together. We all know our strengths and weaknesses. We're shoulder to shoulder nearly every day. And through this entire life cycle, again, from 2015 with the idea, 2016 to the incorporation, and now all the way to 2025. So I think that's very important. Even when we look at new hires, I at least personally analyze them as, who would I want to work with on a day-to-day basis? Because I know they're going to be intelligent people, and you can train intelligent people to do anything. So for me, it's a lot of kind of personality. And we have, through all the ups and downs, been able to stick together and be one happy family.
Yeah. Who wouldn't you mind getting stuck at the airport if, you know, your flight is delayed for a couple of hours?
Like, yeah,
do
absolutely.
Tolerate them or even enjoy their company. Right. That's great. So let's go back to the industry, right? We talked a little bit about how the industry has shifted in terms of technology needs and cloud adoption. But if we take a step back, what do you think broadly are still three challenges, right, that industry, med devices, IoT, whatever you want to call it, right, like, needs to contend with?
I think that the biggest one that I see is around this idea of EHR integration. So for people who aren't aware of the problem, you have all these kind of remote medical devices or software as a medical device that basically need direct interaction with the electronic health record in order to be robust and best serve the patients. That being said, you have these hospitals that are using Epics and Cerners of the world and stuff like this. Each one is a very tailored integration of those EHRs into those systems. And then basically, the burden of managing those EHRs integrations inside the hospital falls to the hospital IT staff. And the hospital IT staff aren't necessarily incentivized to let all
these companies. I was going to say, they have no incentive to
zero,
because it creates more work for them. And yeah, we see this with startups all the time. It's, even if there is buy-in from stakeholders, it's like, you have to be friends with IT and they have to want to do this for you, because that could just stall everything.
Absolutely. And again, it's this function of probably 80% of the companies we work with are startup companies, and you do have this burn that's attached. And if you talk to a hospital and it might take 9 months, that's a realistic number to get an EHR integration that's solid. That's a lot of stress on companies that they might not have otherwise been prepared for. I think that there is a lack of, let's see, what would be a good word for this? There is a belief that a single champion inside of a hospital is sufficient to get through all of the bureaucracy and IT groups. And that is not the case. Maybe initially it was one, but now with these, and I feel for them, these hospital IT teams that have a giant backlog of all these companies knocking on their door wanting EHR connectivity, not knowing who's real, who's not. It really takes 2-3 champions. And again, like you said, making inroads into those IT departments. So getting all of these innovative technologies in a place where it's clinically relevant, that to me is the biggest hurdle. On top of that, a lot of these devices that we're dealing with are class 3 devices. These are life-saving devices, right? And for that reason, the cybersecurity burden is quite high. So for us, we're HITRUST certified, which is the highest level of cybersecurity. Shout out to Tim Sandberg, who's probably lost years of his life trying to get that certification for us. She's our VP of IT Ops. And that our high trust certification is his gold star that he wears every day. And so that has helped a lot trying to meet that kind of high bar. But that's a constant worry and something that you have to look at every single day. And a lot of companies, like you alluded to early, just don't have cybersecurity expertise like that on staff. And if they do hire a third party, maybe that cybersecurity team doesn't have medical experience or maybe doesn't know the headaches that might come with trying to get hospital integrated. That's another challenge that we see quite a bit. And then I think lastly, and this one's kind of maybe more broad, is validation of different AI systems. We see basically a lot of companies trying to go and knock on those hospital doors without being tested against a robust set of data. And I see that as something where eventually, I don't know who it would be, but I see some level of standardization in terms of quality to try to get a lot of those products in the door, because I see a lot of them knocking, which also adds to the backlog of companies trying to get into these hospitals and then basically falling at the doorstep because they just don't have something that's built the way that it should for the audience that it's serving.
Yeah, it sounds like in that case, it's a bit early, right? So I want to go back to the EHR integration, because this is a challenge that we hear day in and day out. Have you seen any sort of tips or tricks? I know nothing's going to make this go away 100%, but what are some ways that startups can think about in terms of, if not sort of making it easier to go through that path, but at least like preparing themselves, right? Is there some way to standardize, right, like some of the security assessment pieces, et cetera?
We've seen the HITRUST certification that we have. Now, this is not something, and this is self-serving, but we haven't seen, at least that's greased the skids a lot when it comes to these hospital groups, because at least it shows that there was enough rigor put in. That's not something that a normal startup company would ever want to tackle. I think that a lot of it still is that relationship building. There are companies out there that you could contract with that will do a lot of the kind of maybe direct integration or a lot of the kind of negotiation with hospitals, but it's always one-to-one. There are maybe one kind of big player that kind of has built out over the last decade a whole portfolio of different hospitals that they work with as a way of kind of shortcutting the current burden, established relationships 10 years ago, front-running this headache that people see today. So they were able to build inefficiencies. And you could maybe work with one of these big EHR integrator companies, but they tend to be pricey. And as we see the necessity of getting to the EHR fall to smaller and smaller companies, I haven't seen a scalable, robust way of doing that for us even. It's still a very laborious process. But what's good is that kind of once you lay the tracks with one hospital, the tracks stay put. Mm-hmm. So it's easy for us to onboard other devices. So we actually have a lot of our clients who kind of plan their go-to-market around our EHR integrations inside of hospitals. So I think that's one. I think another one just got that same point is a lot of companies, I think, over-rely on this idea of a strategic exit. And they say, oh, yeah, like all this stuff works and this EHR thing is a headache for the future. Really trying to get an exit early. And I don't think the exit appetite from strategics is there to pick up companies at that inflection point, the way that it might have used to be, or the way that maybe it might be marketed out there in the news. Sometimes you have to plan for that go-to-market piece, which means making those kinds of connections very early as a company.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on exit these days. For anyone, you do have to show more value. And that comes back to your business model and being able to, I always say there's great ideas, great technologies, right? Where most startups fail is understanding that product market fit and being able to create something and showcasing the value that somebody will pay for it, right? That seems to be the missing piece a lot of the time. 100%
agree with you.
I know you talked a little bit about this, but I want to dive a little bit deeper into like kind of what do you see are the most common use cases or like areas where you see Galen providing the most value to some of these startups? And that may be stage dependent, right? Like early versus right post commercial. If you can share maybe a couple of use cases.
Sure. So I would say we kind of work with three different kinds of companies. We work with early stage company, obviously like mid stage, and then we work with strategics as well. So from the early stage company perspective, it really is a question of being able to not have to raise as much money, not have to hire that team, be able to quickly iterate in some cases as quickly as in an afternoon, start putting data into an FDA compliant cloud infrastructure. And for that reason, you can go out there and you can showcase the device. Everything on the back end is working. We charge a SaaS fee. So it's very kind of predictable when it comes to what the costs are going to be. And be able to really demonstrate something that's robust a lot earlier in your life cycle than what might have been traditionally the norm.
And if I can add on to that, I was going to say, I think it's like peace of mind, right? When you talk to startups about security and compliance, like It's just something where they know they need it. But unless you've gone down this path and done it yourself before, right? Not even worked at a bigger company that did it, et cetera. It's scary, right? Like you think about what, like you're researching, like what is HIPAA? What do I need to do? Especially for things where you don't get that official stamp of approval. I think it's nerve-wracking. So I do see, at least the startups that we work with, there's just peace of mind, right? When it's somebody that understands security compliance frameworks. And you said not just here, but globally. So setting them up to think about a global expansion and global market and just giving that piece to somebody. Again, to you all, it's a kind of like undifferentiated lift because that's what you specialize in. But I think that's a huge value add that when we talk to startups, it's right. It's, oh, if we can offload that piece and not have to worry about it. And again, just spend our time thinking about product iteration, right? And building out features and working on customer relationships, like that would be huge. Imagine somebody who doesn't understand, right, security compliance, like having to like read these docs and go through that. So I think that is something that just isn't called out enough, right? It's like peace of mind when it comes to security and compliance.
Our probably best lead generator in the history of a company is a white paper that we put out around key considerations for medical device cloud connectivity. And I think we called it something marketing-y. I think it was like definitive guide to medical device cloud connectivity or something ridiculous. Either way, we were talking about what's the best way to solve exactly that problem, which is people not having an understanding of kind of what they're going into when you connect, I don't know, a coffee pot versus connect an implantable medical device. So we wrote a white paper, published it, and I basically said, the goal of this white paper is to tell people soup to nuts. This is what you have to do. Write it at a level that a C-suite person could understand it, that not necessarily technical, and just tell people how to build it. And if you go there and you read through the white paper and this thing's been downloaded thousands of times, it'll give you an idea that this is a non-trivial lift, right? This is something that really takes a lot of focus and very specialized people to do. Sometimes the best way to sell your own product is basically just tell people what the alternative is. And that for us has worked like a charm.
Yeah. All right. I'm sorry I interrupted. I know you were going into sort of mid-stage startups.
Yeah. So on the mid-stage side, we see a lot of companies that basically maybe had a Gen 1 unconnected device. And then all of a sudden, that idea of data collection became something that was important to them. And it could be that maybe they wanted to build a data lake. Maybe they did have some sort of new business model, like that pay-per-use model that they wanted to deploy. Or they just knew that basically, this is the way the market is going. Let's all sit down and try to think about ways that we can start leveraging the cloud. So that's probably our second one in terms of where we add value, is this ability to take an unconnected device. We actually have hardware partners that can build things like a little dongle that you stick into the device that can automatically talk to our system to start piping in that information. So being able to quickly give them access to the cloud and really kick the tires on what we think is a robust product, that's a big value add for kind of those companies that are already in commercial. And then from the strategic side, there's a lot of kind of R&D teams that want to be able to quickly iterate on things. And if you think about how strategic is run, at least in our experience, like a big startup company in a lot of ways. So you have these different product managers that are overseeing different devices, and each one has X amount of funding, X amount of timeline, different people higher up inside of the organization that they need to appease. And they're always fighting for funding, it seemed, across the board. So to be able to, if they have the flexibility to go outside maybe their own existing cloud infrastructure, which we see a lot do, we might be an appetizing thing that they can start using to quickly get around a lot of those problems, save them money, reduce their time to market, still do everything compliantly, and be able to give their R&D teams new tools that they might not have had inside of their existing cloud infrastructure that they can use kind of right out of the box.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. You must see a ton of companies, right, across different therapeutic areas, right, and stages. And I'm curious, like, what's one product that, you know, you especially love, whether because it's innovative or just, I don't know, something that solves something very unique out there?
I think as far as the wave of software as a medical device coming to fruition so quickly, raising decent rounds, being able to come out of places like academia and be able to launch so quickly. So our platform is tailor-made for those kinds of device companies because we offer a lot of that infrastructure that's right out of the box. So you could have that physician with an idea or someone in academia with an idea be able to iterate quickly. And that landscape is so broad, it's so dense that granted, there's a lot of overlap in what people are trying to do. But that being said, the use cases that are springing out of that every single day are just mind-boggling. And I think that especially as we move forward in time and AI becomes more widely adopted and people are thinking about AI-first strategies in terms of how they get their device to market, is just going to grow. And one of the things that's interesting in my position is, like you said, talking to a lot of these companies, everyone is just doing such cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And I feel privileged to be able to work with some of these companies in this niche that we fill and really see them succeed and grow and start helping patients and stuff like this and get their products out in the market. And that to me is like one of the great joys of Galen Data is just like helping people do cool stuff and help them get to market because it's so challenging inside a medical device. So any kind of burden that you can relinquish from a company, the better. And I think we do it in a very obvious way. And that is something that I'm very proud of as a company to accomplish.
Yeah. And so late last year, you all were acquired. Huge congrats. I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this question because not a lot of companies that we talked to are at a stage of being able to have an exit. Can you talk a little bit through that process and if there was kind of anything unexpected that came out of it?
Sure. So there had been a couple parties that had knocked on the door before. And one of the best pieces of advice we got was actually from one of our investors, or Rene Van de Zand, who's the former CEO of Emergo. And he was like, don't necessarily take the first deal, no matter how appetizing it might be. And I think to us, it did great favors to be patient, to find the right partner. And in that case, the company is called Luxera Capital Partners. They have an office in Mill Valley, California, which is one of the most beautiful places on the planet. Their home office is in Paris, about a block away from the Arc de Triomphe. And what we found in them was basically—
So that's why you picked them, right?
Absolutely. It was 100%. I was like, Mill Valley, California, I can go hiking in the Muir Woods when I come visit you. 100%. No, sign me up. But truly one of the most beautiful places. If anyone is in San Francisco and wants to cross the Golden Gate Bridge, the Muir Woods, 10 out of 10 in terms of hiking. It's absolutely a place. But long story short, I would say, and then we found the right partner. These were all medical device people. This was their singular focus, their singular passion. They're very growth oriented. So basically what they want us to do is to build ourselves into this next amazing thing and not have to worry about things like the fundraising cycle and stuff like access to resources. And in talking to them, it really gave us a lot of security and kind of the go forward decision, just knowing that mentally we were all aligned and all wanted to drive the ball down the field towards the same kind of outcome. For us, that was very critical when it comes to kind of things that maybe we might not have expected. These things take time. At one point, it was all kinds of lawyers' calls and trying to get stuff ready for inside of the data room for companies that might be looking at something like this in the future. One recommendation that I would have is we were told by Luxera that we were one of the most kind of exit ready companies they talked to just through keeping a robust data room updated all the time and having very good organization inside of our docs and stuff like this. And I think that would pay off big dividends if a company that would be a great acquirer comes knocking on the door and everything is cast around like you're some hoarder company when it comes to documentation and stuff like this. They can really slow down the process and also have a negative reflection on how you run the company. It doesn't take a lot to keep those things.
Especially a company that's in, right, sort of security compliance.
Yes, no, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, speaking about us directly, 100%. Yeah, important, right? All I's dotted, all T's crossed, everything in nice little file folders that you can share in a Dropbox or something like that. I would say maintain that as a focus. I know that when all things med tech in general, everything is very milestone driven. Everyone's heads down trying to hit the next thing. But if you can keep something like that up and updated in parallel, I think it always pays off big dividends, not just for yourselves, if there is no suitor on the other end, but if there is, just being able to present everything on a silver platter, ready to go.
It's always great to hear firsthand. I feel like a lot of the advice, it's like when you hear it, it's common sense, but it's really good to know, hey, this is the number one thing to focus and prioritize. Before we end, I have to ask you, what advice would you give to an entrepreneur that's thinking of building something, not necessarily in this space, but broadly healthcare life sciences?
I think that so much of the industry is trust-based. I think that it's always important, and we've tried over our careers to always be present inside of our own ecosystem, inside of other people's ecosystem, as a kind of a way of building trust and kind of making friends. If it weren't for the friends that we've had inside of Galen, we probably had 1,000 conversations with just helpful folks and trying to be that person back to every community that we touch, I think is very important. So always try to be a helpful human. I think that it'll always pay off big dividends down the road. I would say inside of the medical community, I think that's probably the biggest one is don't underestimate the value of kind of being out there and shaking hands and creating relationships and getting feedback and truly listening to it. I think that's probably the number one piece of advice. And it's something that's easy to do if you have the time. But again, milestone driven, heads down, tough industry. Not all folks do, but I think that the ones that I see out and about the most and ingratiating themselves, their own local communities or in different ecosystems are the ones that you tend to see rise to the top. They're the cream.
Yeah, I can't reiterate how important relationships is, right? This is not a business where you can go in and just make a sale, right? So much of it is relationship driven. These people that you meet, right, early on when, you know, you're not necessarily, you don't have a product, you're not ready to pitch, those are sometimes the relationships, right, that end up paying dividends because you're also not in the kind of mental mindset to sell. And that's actually great, right? It's building relationships, making sure that you're using them as a sounding board for feedback. Keep in touch so that when it does come time to pitch, it doesn't feel like a one-off transactional conversation.
And also, for what we do, we're an integral part of these companies' life cycle and their go-to-market. And for us, we needed to have early adopters. And the only way that we could have gotten companies to work with us young in their life cycle was that trust component, because they were running real business risk. And love our early clients to death would do anything for them because they put a tremendous amount of trust in a very early company that they needed to see survive. And one of the greatest things, there's two great days inside of Galen's life. One was when we started making money. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is fantastic, because it de-risked that business aspect, that business continuity aspect. And then obviously with this, with the acquisition by Luxera Capital Partners, really shoring that up. And definitely through all the market kind of ups and downs in the last 3-4 years, just to be able to have that solid foundation, right? I always wanted to build a company that could last forever, not a business that could just be here today and gone tomorrow. So to me, that added a whole lot personally to really know that our clients, our trust was rewarded.
Alex, thank you so much. Always such a pleasure to chat. Thank you for sharing all the kind of the insights, right, that you've gained in this industry for our audience.
No, always a pleasure, Ian. My goodness. Now, thank you so much for having me. This has been fantastic.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.